G'day and welcome to The List, RN's weekly pop culture odyssey. This is a special edition. It's our monthly TV club. News, previews, reviews and, should I bother, the Binge Fest Taste Test, where we go back to season one of a much-hyped TV series and decide whether it's worth revisiting. This time, we're heading back to a tiny little series about a bunch of high school losers that lasted just one season and was unceremoniously dumped, but launched a dozen major careers. It's been described by Vanity Fair as one of the most beautiful and ambitious television series ever made. It's the cult classic Freaks and Geeks. Nicholas. And today in the TV Clubhouse, we have our very own Freaks and Geeks, our very own TV Tragics, Mark, Marky Mark, mark my words, Humphreys, writer, funny bloke, man about town. G'day, Mark.
Hello, loving the West Wind theme coming through here.
I haven't gotten over that theme. I thought maybe I'd throw it in every now and again. Also with us, Dan Barrett, the media mogul's mogul, the content director of Televised Revolution. G'day, Dan.
Hi, Cassie. I've never felt more presidential.
And joining us for the first time in the clubhouse is the writer, fashion editor, cultural critic and woman about town, Alex Gorman. Welcome, Alex.
Thanks for having me. I'm feeling very posh with this background.
Okay, first up to news and, well, there seems to be legs left in this. The story of the week has to be the great animal video coup on commercial TV. Now, we know that Seven replaced Restaurant Revolution on Tuesday nights a way back a fortnight ago with cat and then dog YouTube videos. They've rated like crazy. This week, they kept it going with pet videos.
If there's one fact you can't deny about the internet, it's that most of it is stuffed to the rafters with videos of our pets doing the most hilarious things. And tonight, we've got the pick of the litter right here.
Okay, Dan, tell us the figures. How did this rate?
Pick of the litter. How do they do it? Okay, here we go. So the very first one aired, it was Cats Make You Laugh Out Loud, 917,000 viewers across Australia in just metro areas. It bounced out to well over a million when the regional gets counted in. The week afterwards, they topped themselves with Dogs Make You Laugh Out Loud.
I wish rephrase they that?
No, this is a positive thing and we're going to talk about why.
Right.
Okay, 1.039 million people in capital cities alone. And then on Tuesday night this week, we saw Pets Will Make You Laugh Out Loud. Didn't do quite as well as the dogs last week, but 943,000, so it's in the middle there. But the more important thing is it actually outrated the entire competition that night. Okay, so it wasn't number one for the night, but it definitely outrated the Hot Plates and Channel 10 Spelling Bee competition.
Okay, so the key learnings here are firstly that we like dogs more than cats or the generic pets category. But Alex,
what does pets mean? Like lorikeets?
Oh, I think there was. I think there's a cockatoo. I think there was a pony in a car. I think there was like a dog getting blown.
See, if it was ponies make you laugh out loud, it would have just beaten dogs all to the wall.
Well, next week's animals, there might be some sort of zoological type experiments.
Oh, yeah. Dogs.
So there is more. There is more.
There's nothing more hilarious than rhino fails.
But Alex, seriously, I mean, TV executives across the country are sort of crying into their coffee cups. Why is this a hit when we all know we could just go and watch it on YouTube?
Well, I think it's kind of fascinating to watch it on the big screen, and perhaps it's people who are not necessarily tech savvy enough to stream their YouTube to their telly that are tuning into these things. But there's also a precedent for it. The only show that gets any kind of rating success in the US during the Super Bowl is the Puppy Bowl, which is basically just the Super Bowl, but dogs, like little puppies, generally Labradors, dressed in NFL uniforms. So
you're serious?
I'm serious, and it does very well every year because everyone who isn't that interested in the Super Bowl but still kind of wants to feel like a part of it can tune over to, I believe it's on Discovery Channel, and watch the Puppy Bowl instead.
Animal Planet.
It's on Animal Planet. Oh, yeah. Thank you.
This is not surprising at all, really. I mean, if I asked you, what is the currently the longest-running comedy series in Australia?
Simpsons.
It's funniest home videos. In terms of Australian television, it's funniest home videos. So we have a history of watching, in some cases, pets, usually sometime around 1994, doing something stupid enough, and occasionally people. And they've just narrowed it down. I'm not surprised by this at all, and I can't wait to see what else they come up with. I won't watch it, but I'm thrilled to find out.
Yeah, look, I have to confess, I love that kind of unplanned slapstick. I do find it very funny. Also, I suppose that show Gogglebox should have alerted us to the idea that we like to watch together as a nation.
I know in my household, we watch stupid videos of animals all the time, but we still got very excited by the idea of the dogs and cats on TV doing funny things. And the reason why I think so much of Australia's come behind this is just the idea that everyone's just tired of other reality shows. This was something that was unexpected. I was like, oh, I could watch the same reality stuff I've been watching week in, week out for months, if not years now, or I could watch this thing that's genuinely entertaining.
That's true. And I think we should celebrate, yes, animals winning over cooking shows.
And it's also this thing where if you're channel surfing, if you're flicking through, the cute puppy is going to make you stop every time. So more so than another face that you don't recognise looking very concerned on a time limit. So to me, it seems like something that could really capture viewers who had no idea that it was coming or that it was on.
Yeah, that's what I like about it. When you watch cats that make you laugh out loud, you're not going, sorry, which one is this again? Which character is it? It's quite easy to just, you know, get into that.
Yeah, and you don't get the Chardonnay factor either. You don't have to keep up with some incredibly complicated plot. Maybe that's just an issue that I have. Now, also in news this week, we learn that Offspring star Matthew Leneves is going to be the lead in the new Peter Brock telly movie.
Is that an interesting story? I don't know. No, sorry.
Is that news?
Well, no, sorry. What I mean the Peter Brock story is what I'm referring to. I don't know his life story. My understanding is he went round in circles for most of his life. I don't know dramatically what that brings us. I know, obviously, he had a fiery death. But other than that, I don't know really his life story. Is it interesting? Did he have an amazing life?
Wow. I feel like the old person in the room here. Yes. I mean, he was one of the greatest racing stars of this country. He was incredibly charismatic. He had a complicated emotional life.
Okay.
When he died, I remember men mourning him like it only dawned on me when I saw that, how important he had been to so many people. What do you reckon, Alex?
Well, the Senna movie that was put together with footage was incredibly exciting and amazing and accessible for someone who's never watched a car race in her life. So maybe there's hope for this. I also have never been really connected to the story of Peter Brock, but Matthew Leneves, I don't know, could make me connect.
Oh, really? So it'll be a hit with the ladies.
Well, fast cars and handsome men, you know.
Mm. So it follows on from the great series of biopics that we keep seeing on Australian screens. There's also The Boy from Oz, another retelling of the Peter Allen story to arrive later this year, which is being made by the same company Shine that did the In Excess story from last year. What is this about?
To me, I reckon at least part of it is just about watching actors that you already know aping characters that you already know. So there's this kind of almost SNL-style appeal of like, ooh, didn't she inhabit him quite well?
But with all the kind of real grittiness taken out.
Yeah, I mean, we look at kind of biopics from the US, things like Straight Outta Compton, for instance, and there were all these accusations of violence against women kind of emerging against the people that the movie's about, so Dr. Dre especially. And when you're seeing a biopic, it's the same with something like A Beautiful Mind. They took out all the gay stuff, so it's generally a very edited, much
sanitized,
more palatable version of a
life. They better keep the gay
life
stuff in the Peter Allen one, otherwise I think the whole thing falls over.
But, that's true.
I'm really excited by that. As someone who has read Not the Boy Next Door, the book on which the miniseries is based, I've got high hopes.
I do too. All right, on from news to reviews. And this week on House Husbands, we're told a very socially significant topic was going to be addressed.
You are not backing out now.
We all agreed that once we got the results, you'd ask Abby.
She's right, it's time.
What if I can't?
You can.
Abby's got so much going on right now. Surrogacy is a major commitment.
Well, we're supplying the sperm.
And my eggs.
Yeah, we're just borrowing her
uterus. It's not a blender.
She's your sister.
That makes it worse. It's harder for her to say no.
All right, Mark, you took a hit for the team and you reviewed this.
Well, if I've learnt nothing else, it's that a uterus is not a blender. House Husbands is in its fourth season now. I'd never seen an episode. I gave it a go. It's terribly dramatic. There's a lot of drama in this drama. I couldn't live the way that these people live. In the first 5 minutes, you know, it's sort of, oh, I've got to get to the hospital because I'm going for that promotion. Ding dong, delivery. Oh, who's that? Oh, I got a delivery for, man has a heart attack, yeah? All right, the doctor then, she then goes in the ambulance with him, tries to resuscitate him, gets to the hospital. Uh-oh, he's got a tattoo that says do not resuscitate. He then sues her. That same woman is then required to be said uterus for this gay couple who also happened to be at the hospital at the same time. You know how you run into people at the hospital all the time. That's the first 5 minutes. It was a lot to deal with. And by the end of the episode, someone stole a dog, a kid nearly got hit by a car, and it turned out that he was almost deaf. So it's, I just think that was too much for me in one episode. I went on Twitter to see what the sort of interactions were with the show. There wasn't a lot of interaction. Most people that were interacting were sort of just reciting the plot back to the House Husband's Twitter handle. Just, oh, that kid nearly got hit by a car. Yeah, we all saw it. We all saw it. So I was just, and there's a lot of exposition. There's a lot of dialogue.
Okay. Yeah. But do you think that even 5 years ago, let alone 10, we would have seen a show firstly called House Husbands, all about blokes with a plot which is about two guys and a lesbian wanting to conceive a child together and hoping that one's sister will be involved in it. I mean, that's, I don't know. I mean, that's sort of contemporary, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, obviously, you know, we've had Modern Family for about, fifth season now. So
it does. Modern Family has the storyline which two gay guys who have an adopted daughter.
Yes. So I guess, look, I suppose it is positive to have more examples of different lifestyles out there so that, you know, to normalise those things. But it didn't, yeah, so it didn't feel groundbreaking to me, but maybe for other people it would. I think the show has got so much going on that the impact of that is sort of lost amidst the suing and the heart attacks and the cameo from Jane Kennedy, who is sadly wasted in this episode.
Well, that's really harsh criticism from from you, because I know that you're Mr. Buy Australian and you'll defend Australian content until it makes your eyes bleed. Now to Catastrophe. Now, this show started last Thursday on ABC2. It's set in London. It's about Sharon, an Irish school teacher, and Rob, an American advertising executive, who've had a one-night stand that turns into a week-long fling. And that's that. Until Sharon discovers she's pregnant and calls Rob to let him know. And a warning, there's some adult language ahead.
Hey, so great to hear from you. I'm sorry that I haven't called, but I have some good news. I'm going to be in London in April.
I'm pregnant.
Did you just say pregnant?
Yeah, I said pregnant. Do you want me to say it again? Pregnant.
I don't understand. I mean,
because you know, we had sex about 25 times in a week and you wore a condom maybe twice of those times.
Why did you let me do that?
I don't know, because I was drunk.
What do you want to do?
I want to build a time machine out of your fucking carcass and go back and make it unhappen.
Alex Gorman, what did you make of this one?
I got very into it very quickly. I really love shows where it almost feels like every character could be a stand-up comedian, and this is a very kind of bitty show. So you'll get these fabulous monologues from all of the characters. And there's one kind of bedtime banter in the third episode where our male protagonist says, "I just wish there was an airborne gout that would only kill off rich people." And it's just filled with things like that that make me really happy.
Yeah. So Rob is Rob Delaney and Sharon is Sharon Horgan. They are actually, Rob is a comedian of renown. He was voted by Comedy Central as the funniest man on Twitter in their first awards year.
Yeah, and they write the show together as well as starring in it, and you can really feel that these are people who are delivering their own lines.
Yeah, they're very sure of their own material. Mark, do you like it?
I love it. And, great to see Rob Delaney make the jump from Twitter, because for a while it felt like he was just going to be sort of stuck there, and nice to see him, you know, transition into TV comedy. I got into it really, really quickly. It's no House Husbands.
It's a real anti-romance romance. I really love it too. What about you, Dan?
Well, I think I recommended this on the list that I was on. Oh. Well, you know, that's what it is.
No one one listens to me.
I'm just saying, and everyone here loves her, so, you know, take that for what it is. But no, what I love about this show is that it's just really, really human. There's this great scene in the first episode where the Rob character goes to meet Sharon outside of the school that she works in. But when she comes out, there's a moment where he leans in to kiss her, and she does this immediate thing where she just sort of leans back and just gives this gesture of saying, you know, not here in front of the kids. And that's actually how you'd behave. And it's those little moments that I think really carry it through.
To the fine details that make it really great.
The way that the women speak to each other as well feels incredibly authentic. There's a moment where they're sort of talking about whether or not you need a man to have a child now, and her friend points out, oh, you can't have an affair if you are with this man. Like, look at the new deputy principal, he's pretty tasty. And she says, I'll still be able to do that, it'll just be harder. And that kind of feels like the sort of awful but kind of wonderful thing that girlfriends do say to each other. So it feels like it's coming from a very honest place.
Yeah, they are very jaded teachers. Well, the good news is that it's been renewed for another season, which is going to air in the UK in October. So eventually, you know, next year sometime, it'll make it to our shores. Okay, culture lovers and TV freaks, it's time now on the TV Club for Should I Bother? And this week's target is the 1999 series Freaks and Geeks. Hey, Nicholas. Mark Humphreys, in 25 words or less, what is this about?
Well, it's 1980, it's Detroit, it's a high school, but it's not focusing on the traditional jocks or the cheerleader characters, those popular kids. It's the freaks and the geeks. It's the freaks who are, they're a bunch of 16-year-old kids, they're, you know, sort of post-puberty, they're sort of slightly outsider characters. And then there's the geeks, they're about 14, and they're, you know, they're classic nerds, glasses falling over themselves, don't know how to talk to girls, unlike us, of course. It focuses largely on these brother and sister. There's Lindsay, who joins the freaks, and Sam, the boy who joins the geeks.
And notably, it stars so many people who are in their first roles who went on to become incredibly famous. There's James Franco, Seth Rogen, Jason Segel. I mean, it's
Izzy
a cavalcade.
Izzy Phillips, Lizzie Kaplan.
Shia LaBeouf.
Martin Starr, who's in Silicon Valley now as the quintessential geek.
And it was directed by...
Well, Judd Apatow and Paul Feig have since gone on to very successful directing careers. So Judd Apatow, obviously 40-year-old virgin and Knocked Up, and recently did the Amy Schumer comedy, Trainwreck. And then Paul Feig, who's just been responsible for Bridesmaids and a bunch of the Melissa McCarthy comedies, and is just about to do Ghostbusters. What do you make of that film?
Yeah, look, you know those things where they do the map of the underground in London, but it's like the history of jazz or something. This, if there was one of those big maps of the American high school genre, it would be smack bang in the middle. And Judd Apatow is this sort of, well, it's like a kind of indie comedy tangent that he goes off on. Mm. And he worked on Girls with Lena Dunham.
And he's just this driving force behind so much of America's kind of semi-edgy but still mass appeal comedies. He's had a hand in so something like This Is the End, where Seth Rogen and James Franco and every celebrity they could find all play themselves, and it's kind of still got this gritty indie feel, is an Apatow vehicle. But then you also get like big smash hits like The 40-Year-Old Virgin.
And he casts very, for want of a better word, real people. Like the nerds they've got playing the geeks, they really, you know, they look like someone you'd beat up.
There would be no Napoleon Dynamite without these nerds.
Right, exactly. No, I think the casting is just impeccable on it, and their ability to spot the talent of tomorrow. And it's such a tragedy that this show only went for, what, one season or 18 episodes, I think it was.
Although it's a tragedy, and it's also kind of a beautiful thing because it never had time to get bad. It just exists sure. as this perfect 18-episode capsule.
Yeah.
I think what's interesting about this show is that it is a show that was cancelled because it was a little bit before its time. If it had come along 5 years afterwards, I think people would be a bit more accepting. And I think the reason why it was cancelled is it spoke so heavily to what the late 90s were about, with a sense of cynicism involved in it.
And the structure is also incredibly before its time. I mean, this isn't a show that you can just kind of dip in and out of. It's really serialized. It's really character-driven. There are kind of enormous arcs. In that way, it's quite cinematic. You sort of have to watch it from end to end, which is why it was such a runaway hit on Netflix, because it is the ultimate kind of binge-watching show long before binge-watching was a twinkle in anyone's eye.
Let's hear a scene. This is where young Lindsay is sort of breaking into the, well, I think they're cool, but Mark thinks they're burn-offs.
Well, cool by my standards, but yeah, but they're technically the freaks. I mean, I think cool, if you consider the world of this high school, is the footballers and the cheerleaders. It's not those people. It's people that are cool in the sense that they're kind of forging their own identities.
You were in my English class last year, right? You're that chick who got an A.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do?
I don't know. What are you going to do?
So you guys going to the homecoming dance?
I beg your pardon?
That's funny. It's a joke, right?
I just thought maybe, you know, you guys were going to go. To make fun of people. I mean, that could be kind of funny, right?
Look, I mean, you know they're going to play disco, right?
Disco sucks. I hate disco.
Rather make out Principal Farber, you know?
Oof, again?
But yeah. The jokes aren't really that funny in real life, but it's the sort of jokes that these burnouts would be making in high school, which is what makes it resonate so well.
It's so refreshing to hear those. Yeah, this is lines you wouldn't just normally hear, because, yeah, like that, that, you know, what are you going to do line is not inherently funny, but Seth Rogen's delivery is so refreshing, and it's a triumph.
And a lot of the humour comes from that desperation in Linda Cardellini's voice as well. Like that backtrack of like, oh no, to make fun of it. Like that's such a painfully awkward, I'm trying to fit in kind of thing to have happen. And you laugh at it because it's so relatable, but it's not, you know, inherently humorous aside from her deep pain.
There's also this running gag, you know, with her dad, who is like constantly telling her that, you know, somebody else did what you just did and you know what happened to them. In fact, here's a bit.
You know who used to cut class? Jimi Hendrix. You know what happened to him? He died, choking on his own vomit.
Daddy, I skipped Latin.
Oh, well, I can understand why you wouldn't want to learn about that. It's only the building block of our language.
Well, I'm just glad your grandmother wasn't alive to hear about this.
You can't cut corners in life. You know who cut corners? Kennedy. Kennedy cut corners when he was running the Bay of Pigs. A lot of good men lost their lives because of it. You know who else cut corners? Janis Joplin.
Dad! What are you talking about? You don't make any sense. I just cut class and guess what? Everybody's still alive. Just leave me alone!
Oh my God, I think I've yelled that myself.
Just listening to that clip, I'm reminded of how much the father from 10 Things I Hate About You owes to that father, the kind of ridiculous, overblown scenarios, which in 10 Things I Hate About You are all kind of pregnancy-based, could be hit every beat that he hits.
And then I feel like then the sort of the more recent example as well is like in Arrested Development, where you've got that character J. Walter Weatherman that the father, George Sr., is always bringing in to make a point about, you didn't leave a note and now this man's lost his arm, or you left the fridge open and this man has lost his arm. There's always,
the guilt trip.
It's interesting that we look at Freaks and Geeks as this sort of genesis of all this comedy that we're appreciating now, where the father from the show, he's played by an actor named Joe Flaherty, and he was from SCTV back in the day, it was a Canadian sketch comedy show, which is really sort of the genesis of a lot of the comedians in the sort of late 80s, early 90s. That's where they got their comedic inspiration from. And I'm sure that Judd Apatow would have been watching SCTV as a kid and taking his comedic cues from there. So really, Joe Flaherty is kind of the real sort of progenitor for the comedy that we're experiencing in the show.
I think it's very important that this was made in 1999. I think there is a pre-September 11 innocence and sentimentality about life that disappeared actually after that. And the idea that the freaks, these guys that we're saying are sort of uncool but edgy guys, are actually just really like big puppies and very, very nice and friendly deep down, suggests that being an outsider and being a bit outside the law, in fact, wasn't such a big deal.
Mm. Well, I think the show really does sort of encourage you to be yourself, and that, yes, high school is this really, you know, if you are someone who's trying to be themselves, high school is this awful experience. But if you stick with it, if you, you know, cling together with like-minded people, you'll make it through.
It gets better, Mark.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. But I mean, I really related to, you know, some of the nerd characters. It's hard to believe that there was a time before this where I was not as, you know, handsome and charismatic as I am now. So I certainly related to some of those nerdish, you know, going to school and quoting something you saw on TV the night before. I really, really felt that. And having someone who's making your life hell and working out how the hell you're going to deal with it the next day. So I think that, you know, they really captured the high school experience. Now, obviously, yes, it's 1980 in Detroit, but I think it's a universal experience that they managed to capture in this show.
Yeah. And they also told this story that we really don't see that much in high school, but that from my experience is really authentic, which is the smart girl who gets great grades but kind of just wants to break out of that and run wild. And it's not like she's getting a sexy makeover to go from being Sandy who wears the puffy football skirts in Greece to being Sandy who's wearing the super tight black pants.
Or Rizzo.
Yeah, my favorite. We're seeing this girl who kind of just ditches mathletes to go watch The Grateful Dead, and that's something that, yeah, feels very authentic, but I don't think it's a story that America likes to tell that often because it's nowhere near as sexy to have this girl who was one kind of not traditionally feminine, not sexy, turn into another kind of not traditionally feminine, not sexy person.
Well, actually, Vanity Fair had a piece looking back at Freaks and Geeks, which is where it described it as one of the most beautiful and ambitious television series ever made. And Judd Apatow says that he thinks that the TV executives didn't actually get her character at all, Lindsay's character, and where her pain and her rebellion was coming from. And that just sort of escaped them. And she's quite subversive.
Yeah, that same article kind of touched on the fact that she's doing that because she's just decided that there is no God. And I think the story of a little girl finding atheism isn't exactly something that we can kind of expect from screens, especially back then.
Mm. And that actually gives the show its real poignancy. All right, so the verdict, would you recommend it? I know you've seen it many times, Dan. Would you recommend it to anyone?
And I'll watch it many, many more times. I will recommend this to everybody.
Alex?
If you were picked on in high school or just felt picked on, watch it again and again.
And if it's not for you, you were a bully.
It's true.
You were part of the problem.
I think it's very special and it illustrates a whole part of television history that if you don't know about this show, you don't understand. Now, just briefly before we go, two recommendations. Alex, to you, what are you recommending?
I'm recommending this very special YouTube show called The Big Les Show, which started as a kind of 3-minute mini YouTube thing. It's very weird, burnout, kind of trippy cartoon humour. Not safe for work, absolutely. Probably not safe for children either. But they've just released a 55-minute long animated episode. And it's already clocked up 300,000 YouTube views. It's Australian. And it's just kind of this extraordinary, weird thing that you just would never sort of expect to get the following that it does.
I'm going to check that one out for sure. Mark Humphries.
Watch the Four Corners special on Bill Shorten. For all those people who say that the ABC's biased, and just watch that. It's fine. It's great.
Dan, what about you?
I'd like to recommend a podcast series that people who are really into TV, I think, will get a fair bit out of. It's called the Nerdist Writers Panel. And it's a guy named Ben Blacker, who's a wannabe TV writer. And every week he assembles a panel of established TV writers to explain their craft and what they're doing. The one I really want to recommend is one that came out last week. It's an interview with Amy Sherman-Palladino, who's the creator of The Gilmore Girls and Bunheads. And it is one of the funniest half hours of a writer talking about her craft. You will love, love, love this interview.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. Cool. Okay, great. For my money, I am absolutely loving Humans. You might have heard me banging on about it before. It's on ABC at the moment. It's the story of what happens when we let robots into our domestic lives, and the results are a little unsettling. That's it for the TV Club. Thank you very much to our Clubhouse members today, Mark Humphries, Alex Gorman, and Dan Barrett.
Thanks, Cassie.
Now, of course, the details of all the programs that we've discussed will be on the list's program page. And sooner or later, you'll also see a video, if you care to look, of Should I Bother? Time for me to go. I'm Cassie McCullough. I'll see you next week.